I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. NBC suspended news anchor Brian Williams yesterday for 6 months without pay after he admitted that he made a mistake when he said he was aboard a military helicopter that was shot at and forced down in Iraq in 2003. The discrepancy between his initial report and his appearance on the David Letterman show in 2013 and a recent story about a tribute at a Rangers hockey game came to light after several veterans who were with Williams in Iraq refuted his version of events. NBC is currently investigating Williams' reporting from Iraq, as well as his coverage of Hurricane Katrina in 2005 and the Middle East in 2006. Today on Radio Times, we discuss the controversy surrounding Williams and the journalistic principles and ethics at stake. We begin our conversation by getting reaction from Michael Lev. He's a member of the Chicago Tribune's editorial board, and he covered the war in Afghanistan. Michael Lev, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks, Marty. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd just be curious about your sort of initial and perhaps several-day response to how Brian Williams, over time, exaggerated the danger he was in while covering the war in Iraq. As a war correspondent yourself, what are your thoughts?
Well, as I started to think back about my time, because I couldn't help do it, of course, I was initially skeptical of his explanation, you know, and the word conflate, which is how he used to describe what happened. In other words, there were a lot of things that happened, and he kind of mixed up a little bit what he heard about and reported on versus what he experienced. And, you know, there is that term, the fog of war, but there's also kind of the opposite of the fog of war, as I think back on it, you know, and that is the heightened awareness of everything you're doing, and particularly when you're a journalist. You know when you're in the middle of a hot story, and you know when you're covering something historic. And so maybe some of the details over time will get confused or fade away. But I just kept coming back to the thought that I can recall very specifically the most dramatic incidents that I experienced and places that I was, and no confusion in my memory about the things that I saw versus the things that maybe my colleagues told me about. So I found my sympathy for him kind of fading away a little bit.
Well, as you said, and it is easy for all of us to conflate things that happened in the past, but it sounds like what you're saying, Michael, is that what Brian Williams did was to inflate, which was to increase the danger. I mean, based on his own reporting, he increased the danger that he was in. He was not in a Chinook helicopter that took on an RPG and had a big hole in its stern, and sort of inflating the danger he was in.
Right. Well, first of all, I mean, put it in terms that everybody can experience, right? I mean, I've been in a couple car accidents in my life, and I can remember the terror and the crunching of metal, and there's sort of it is implanted in my brain. Now picture yourself in the middle of a war zone over the skies of Iraq, and you're in one of these enormous army helicopters bristling with guns, and you're carrying stuff, and it's very dramatic, and someone starts shooting at you and hits, you know, your helicopter with an RPG, and you're afraid you're going to drop out of the sky. If you are in that situation, you will not forget it. And if you're not in it, I don't know how you put yourself in it. But, you know, on the other hand, he was in the middle of a war zone, and that's a pretty brave thing to do for anybody. And so part of the puzzlement here is why he felt that need to inflate, because if he was interested in developing his chops as a war correspondent, you know, as far as I'm concerned, as far as anyone should be concerned, he did it. He was over there covering a war, and you know, and that's a great responsibility, and one that should have been enough.
I'm looking at an interview he did with Stars and Stripes reporter Travis Tritton, interviewed Brian Williams. And one of the things he said is, it was my first engagement of the war. And remember, we all were, I think, scared. I've yet to meet the veteran who doesn't admit to clinching up a little bit when it starts. Which raises a question about, this was his first engagement. He'd never covered a war before. Whether there are certain kinds of skills, experience, talents you have to have in order to be a war correspondent.
Oh, I guess there probably are. In that way, I never really felt that I was a war correspondent. I felt like I always wanted to be a foreign correspondent. I was very privileged to get the job. I was our Beijing bureau chief during that time. And what I always sort of told myself was, is you don't get the privilege of being a foreign correspondent just to fly to Paris to cover the peace talks. Mm. You know, you got to go where the story is. And so you do that. I never considered myself a particularly kind of brave guy and just a suburban dad, you know, with a very, very exciting day job. So for me, it was always a question of I have this responsibility and I'm going to go do it, and I've got to learn to do the job right. And the funny thing about it all is it's not about overcoming fear. It's managing the risk because you feel the responsibility of being there, and because every journalist loves a good story. And I've suddenly found myself part of a team of Tribune correspondents covering the most important story in the world. And so when I was there, when I was in places like Jalalabad, what was really hard was not doing stupid things and learning the difference between being a good, smart, aggressive reporter who's going to bring the story home and doing something dumb and getting killed. So there is a real learning curve to it. You have to rely on your colleagues, rely on the local journalists you're working with, and tell yourself, and you also have to have good editors too, who will guide you and will, among other things, help you make those decisions and sometimes make the decisions for you. So there was at least one case where my editor said, leave Jalalabad and go back to Islamabad because it's kind of crazy. We don't know what's going on. And I fought them on it because it's like, this is my job. But thankfully, you know, they were there to guide me. So yeah, there's a whole learning curve to it. And then on top of that is the mythology of the war correspondent, which is another thing. And I think that's what he fell prey to.
What is the mythology of the war correspondent that you've sort of faced danger along with the military that you're covering?
Yeah, that you face danger. That, you know, it's everything that you know or you know, think you know about Hemingway, right? That the bullets are flying, and you know, you got the story, and then even better, you go back to the bar at night and tell that story to everybody else, you know, and that's the trap. And I can feel that a little bit too, you know. I mean, I've done lots of different jobs in journalism in my life, but nothing captivates people but like talking about being in Afghanistan. And I always felt a little, not guilty about it, but just a little reticent because I was there to do a job. I wasn't there to be brave. I know it was really exciting. It changed my life. But it's just a bit gauche to just, you know, going around talking about it because it's serious business and because you're covering a war and there are a lot of Americans who went and fought and died or were, you know, seriously injured, you know, and I'm just there telling the story. I mean, I'm grateful and I think it's important what I was part of. So what I'm just trying to say is I don't try to bring it up a lot. People will bring it up with me and then I'm happy to talk about it, which is why I'm doing an interview like this, because I also have an obligation to do that too. But it's a little bit of a tricky thing, and I feel like you can get carried away very easily, and that's my presumption of what happened with him.
You have to be able to check your ego, right?
Exactly.
We'll be talking about this a little bit later with our other guests, but also going on, I'm thinking of David Letterman, and you have an audience, and they're applauding, and they're laughing. I mean, that does feed the ego.
No, it does. You know, and I've got my stories, too, and, you know, and they sound very dramatic, and you sort of can't help yourself, you know? I mean, because particularly in retrospect when you're back in safe ground, then what do you have, you know? I've got the stories that I put in the paper, you know, and you can go back and look at the archive, you know, or I've got my own personal perspective on it, you know, and what the, you know, what the sound of a clinking machine gun makes, you know, when it's dropped to the ground and you know, and all that sort of stuff. And I understand that. I mean, and I love reading about war too. I mean, I've read 100 books on World War II. Because you always want to know sort of not just what it was like, but how would you have done, you right. know? And that's why I read books about D-Day, because it's like, whether it's for the correspondents or the, you know, or the guys who were, you know, hitting the beach, you know, how would I have performed? And that's a big part of the whole kind of, like I said, the mythology of war. He got caught up in it, and he noticed, this is just completely speculation, but this is just based on the feeling that I, you know, just my own conversations, people want to hear about it. And you lead them along, and Brian Williams is a great storyteller, you know, and suddenly, you know, what became a helicopter that he crew that he happened upon an hour later becomes the helicopter ahead of us, and then suddenly it's my helicopter, and that's just so wrong.
Yes, indeed. I mean, clearly he has hurt himself, and it'll be interesting to see what NBC does or what he does going forward. But do you think he's hurt journalism?
You know, I do. We only have, you know, one currency in what we do, right? And that's our integrity. That is the trust, you know, and they're using that word a lot, and they always use that word on TV, but it's real. It's real in our newsroom here, where we aren't as glamorous, you know, as the nightly network news. That's all we have. And that's why when a couple of things go wrong, when a journalist commits a sin, like fabricating a story or plagiarizing, there's just very little room to overcome that, because then everything that you do after that is open to question. And there are reporters whose reputations have been destroyed by this, and that's why newsroom managers are really meticulous about it, and they're very and you know, there's not a lot of sympathy for it. So that kind of gets to the question of, well, what about this punishment for him? And
does that seem
kind of thinking about it?
Yeah. Well, and about a minute before I have to say goodbye to you, Micah. But yeah. What do you make of the punishment? 6 months without pay.
6 months without pay. 6 months out of the newsroom is a very, very long time. It's a terrible. It is a severe punishment. I don't underplay that. I think we still have to see what happens with the investigation. You know, and if there is a proven pattern. Then I think that's it. That should be it for him. If there is not, and this is it, then he may survive, you know, but, it's not disingenuous, but there are other pressures there. I mean, he's got a 9 million, you know, 9 million strong audience, and you don't come by that lightly. I'm glad they're taking it seriously, and I'm glad that we're having the whole conversation here, because for all the criticism the media gets, I really hope people do come away from this with the idea that we take our ethics seriously. We're different than politicians, where it's all about myth building. You know, we're about telling the truth. And when we screw up like that, we apologize and we correct our errors. And if it's worse than that, then there need to be repercussions.
Well, on that note, Michael Lev, thanks so much for joining us today in Radio Times, getting our conversation started.
Thanks.
You're welcome. And he's a member of the Chicago Tribune's editorial board, and he covered the war in Afghanistan. We are talking about the fact that yesterday NBC suspended news anchor Brian Williams. We have two guests waiting in the wings and, of course, want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen. NBC News anchor Brian Williams was suspended yesterday for six months without pay after it was revealed that he exaggerated the danger he was in reporting from Iraq back in 2003. We're talking about the controversy surrounding Williams, some of the journalistic ethics and credibility issues that are raised by his exaggerations and what NBC is doing. Joining us is Paul Farhi, media reporter for The Washington Post. Paul, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you for having me, Marty.
You're welcome. And also with us is Andrew Tindall. He runs the Tindall Report, monitoring the weekday nightly newscast of the three American broadcast television networks. Andrew Tindall, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Hi, Marty.
To you, Paul, NBC do the right thing by suspending Brian Williams yesterday?
Well, I don't think they had too much choice in the matter. There were so many questions being raised about Brian Williams that I think his credibility was severely damaged, and by extension, NBC's credibility was damaged. If they had done nothing, people would have been asking, how can you tolerate this? So they had to act. You could argue about what they had to do, but they had to do something, and they had to be very public about it.
And to you, Andrew Tindall, what impact is this having on NBC?
It's too soon to tell whether it's a hit or a mortal blow. I mean, obviously, there's nothing but negative news at NBC that's happening here, but... it's a very long-standing newscast, the NBC Nightly newscast. My own personal opinion is that most of the work for that newscast is not done by the anchor. It's done by the correspondents and the producers and the production crew, and they'll still be working there.
And so they'll still be there. So are you saying it doesn't matter who the host is?
I'm saying it matters a lot less than people think it does.
Oh, interesting. Do you agree with that, Paul?
Not really. I defer to Andrew, who knows this business inside and out, but the face of the network is the anchorman. People watch people on the news. They watch those people more than they watch the news itself. People are loyal to a particular individual. I watch Brian Williams. I watch Scott Pelley. I watch David Muir. They don't say I watch their report on the stock market or on the Afghanistan war. You get into a habit, and the habit is tied to an individual.
What I find, and I do want to play a couple of clips in just a minute or two. I'll put this back to you, Paul. What I find just so curious is this is something that happened in 2003. One can assume that Brian Williams was not alone, that he had a crew with him when he was on that Chinook helicopter in Iraq in the early parts of the war, which is that it took so many years for the story to get exaggerated and then for it to get challenged. Do you understand why it took so long, Paul?
Well, I think you're getting at something very, very important, which is it isn't just Brian Williams. There is an entire staff of reporters, technicians, executives who probably were aware that he was, let's just say, making mistakes about his characterization of events. And what did they know, and when did they know it, and what did they do about it is a question that I think is going to emerge after the fact. NBC is investigating itself. They don't want to call it an investigation, but they are looking into some of these issues, and I think that's going to be a shoe that's going to drop who knows when. But I think that's an important question here.
Well, go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, I agree with Paul, absolutely. It's not clear at the moment whether Williams's transgressions amount to embellishing a story that was originally reported on air as true at the time, and he's being punished for his exaggerations and embellishments, or whether he actually made stuff up in 2003 and told lies about what had happened. If he lied at the time, then he was reporting on Tom Brokaw's newscast, and Tom Brokaw was the managing editor of that newscast, and Brokaw had 18 months in between him having that job and handing it over to Williams, where this this report would have been scrutinized. And if he failed to exercise due diligence, then the finger points directly at Brokaw.
Well, I just want to say, Marty, that lied is really a very loaded word here. He may have gotten stuff wrong. We all get stuff wrong. Lied, it goes to a much deeper, willful act. And I don't know that he lied, but getting stuff wrong, that's not a firing offense.
Right.
If it is,
nobody knows
lie,
if he lied. I'm saying
if he willfully did so, then yes, that would be a journalistic death penalty.
But you're saying, Paul,
not clear here.
We don't know that yet. Andrew, any response to that?
No, absolutely. That's what I'm saying. We don't know that. That's what they're doing an investigation for. That's one of the questions that's out there. I mean, what is the veracity of this 2003 report? And if it was wrong, what reason did he say things that were wrong?
Well, let me play a little excerpt from that 2003 report. This is about halfway through his reporting. It's March 26, 2003, and the headline was Target Iraq Helicopter. NBC's Brian Williams was riding in, comes under fire. That's the headline. And this is just about 30 seconds, and it begins with the pilot's voice on the helicopter. Let's give it a listen.
We took fire on the way in. We currently are not under fire. I say again, not under fire, but we look for some type of security. Over.
We quickly make our drop and then turn southwest. suddenly, without knowing why, we learn we've been ordered to land in the desert. On the ground, we learn the Chinook ahead of us was almost blown out of the sky. That hole was made by a rocket-propelled grenade, or RPG, fired from the ground. It punched cleanly through the skin of the ship, but amazingly, it didn't detonate.
And let me play an excerpt from an interview he did with David Letterman. Interestingly, exactly 10 years later, this is March 26, 2013, so perhaps the 10th anniversary of what happened on that day. And this is Brian Williams describing what happened to David Letterman. And let's give that a listen.
We were in some helicopters. What we didn't know was we were north of the invasion. We were the northernmost Americans in Iraq. We were going to drop some bridge portions across the Euphrates so the 3rd Infantry could cross on them. Two of our four helicopters were hit by ground fire, including the one I was in.
No kidding.
RPG and AK-47.
What altitude were you hit at?
We were only at 100 feet doing 100 forward knots because we had these massive pieces of bridge beneath us on slings.
What happens the minute everybody realizes you've been hit?
We figure out how to land safely, and we did. We landed very quickly and hard, and we put down, and we were stuck. Four birds in the middle of the desert.
So, Paul, as you said, it's too soon to say this is a lie, but clearly it's an exaggeration. Brian Williams puts himself in greater danger with this retelling of this story. Interesting use of the word we. So what do you make of these stories 10 years apart?
Well, and he's wrong, first of all. You know, we know that now. The helicopter he was in had not been hit, had not been damaged. They did not land hard. They landed actually fairly leisurely, as it turns out. So that story is very wrong. But again, I don't want to ascribe some motivation like lying. I will say, though, that there are lots of Brian Williams stories that are exaggerated around. And we've reported on some of them. Other people have reported on them. There seems to be a pattern. He does seem to, in the telling of his stories, kind of turn them into these fish stories about the big ones that got away.
To you, Andrew, what's so interesting to me is that these are stories he told in public. These were not stories that he told, over the Thanksgiving dinner table, but he's telling them in public. It's so easy to vet these stories.
Yes. So, in other words, what you're implying is an element of recklessness to his behavior.
Or that somehow he was believing his own exaggerations.
If you actually parse very, very carefully the way he phrased the Letterman story, he said there were two helicopters that were hit by grenades and by bullets, small arms fire. It's possible to think of a very exquisite way in which he was still abiding by the truth of his original 2003 story, in that two helicopters were hit by a mixture of grenades and bullets. Mine was the helicopter that got the bullets, and his was the one that got the grenade. So technically, if there was a couple of bullets that glanced off the bottom of the helicopter, then he's still within the bounds of truth. What seems to have happened here is that he's told stories with a degree enough of ambiguity that there's no lie involved. And as time has gone on, the carefulness with which he's been ambiguous has eroded.
Oh, interesting. Let me reintroduce the two of you. That's Andrew Tindall. He runs the Tindall Report, monitors the weekday nightly newscasts of the three American broadcast television networks, including NBC. Also with us is Paul Farhi, media reporter for The Washington Post. And we are talking about the fact that Brian Williams was suspended yesterday. He's was the NBC News anchor, suspended yesterday, 6 months without pay, after it was revealed that he exaggerated the danger he was in reporting from Iraq in 2003. I'm sure you're well aware of this particular story. We want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Paul, I wonder, do you see Brian Williams as a kind of celebrity news anchor in that he shows up on David Letterman show. He shows up on The Daily Show. He's a pretty regular on Jon Stewart's program and other sort of nightly news, more light comedy type shows, and apparently was a very prized guest.
Yes, he does sort of transcend the simple label of journalist. And that was both his strength and his weakness, as it turns out. It was his strength because he sold Brian Williams and NBC News very well on those performances. That is, people could see him and say, this is a charming guy, this is an entertaining guy, he's got a great way with the story. I want to watch this guy, I like him. The problem, of course, was that his stories might not actually be journalistically sound. And so, you know, in becoming that personality, he oversold, he went well beyond what he should have as a journalist. And that's the problem. Again, it really wasn't about the journalism per se. It's not what exactly he reported. We could argue about that, but it's not that. It's the way in which he talked about what he reported. That's the issue. It's a kind of weird, indirect kind of indictment of him. Nevertheless, as an anchor, he is responsible for being accurate even when he's talking at his Thanksgiving table. I mean, if you go on national television and tell exaggerations, it does bear on your credibility and trustworthiness, and that's where he got into trouble.
And he's also the managing editor as well. So, I mean, he had larger responsibilities even than just being the host.
That's right. I mean, the newscast is an embodiment of him and an extension of him to a certain extent. If people don't perceive him as credible or trustworthy, why would they think anything that's reported on there is worth watching? So, you know, he has a very, you know, solemn and sacred kind of image he has to protect, and that's what we look to anchors to do. You know, they read us the news. It's in some ways a very simple job. Mm. On the other hand, it embodies so many different qualities that you don't think about as you're watching, but you have to trust and you have to believe.
We have a Facebook comment from Greg. I'll put this to you, Andrew Tindall. How far up the chain does the responsibility need to go? Executive producers, division heads, and does it raise those kinds of questions for you as well?
Yes. I mean, that is presumably what the internal investigation at NBC is going into. I mean, these. Especially at the top of the tree, these celebrity journalists are surrounded by an entourage at all times. He when he arrived in Iraq, he wasn't a freelance reporter hitchhiking through the country. He had an entire apparatus surrounding him. You know, their job is to protect their celebrity journalist, star journalist, but also to make sure that he doesn't say anything wrong or get himself into trouble or misrepresent things. You know, there is his fact checkers as well, and it's that entire operation that broke down at Inside NBC, not just the internal workings of Mr. Williams' brain.
And I just I read that he had just renewed his contract with NBC, getting paid $10 million a year. Andrew Tindall, is that the kind of going rate for a host for the nightly news?
Yeah, this is the interesting thing that's happening here, is he can be seen as really, in changing times, the last of that generation of price points in terms of salary. You know, one thing that NBC is going to be doing by having Lester Holt read the news for 6 months instead of Brian Williams is they're going to be saving an awful lot of money. It might be that they actually financially benefit by not having to pay him.
We have another Facebook comment. I'll give this to you, Paul. Does journalistic fact-checking go out of the window when the supplier of the fact is oneself or is famous in one's own right? And why did this take so long to come out? Something we had referenced earlier. But is this a little too incestuous, this relationship that perhaps Brian Williams had with himself?
I'm not sure I really understand that question, but I would say that no journalist uncovered this. Ultimately, this was done by the soldiers who were involved in that incident back in 2003. They went on NBC's Facebook page and criticized Brian Williams, saying that you're misrepresenting the facts of this case. You know you are. And that's how the story came out in the first place. So we wouldn't really have known about this if it hadn't been for those service people who brought it to the attention. But as soon as they did, then it became, you know, everything was on the record. Everything was up for grabs. Katrina, you know, his coverage of Israel, Hezbollah in 2006, so on and so forth. His entire career was laid open, and then you started seeing the pattern there, and that was, you know, in quick order led to the end of him.
Well, in fact, Paul, you mentioned Katrina and also the coverage. I guess it was the Hezbollah-Israel situation in 2006. Those have come under question as well?
That's right. He has given varying accounts of riding in an Israeli military helicopter with rocket fire coming from over the border in Lebanon from Hezbollah, the rockets flying underneath the helicopter. And, you know, it fits the same pattern. I was in the middle of danger, and, you know, a lot of people have called this humble bragging. Look at me. I risked my life to bring you the news. But, aw shucks, it's what I do. And in the Israeli case, there clearly was some danger. There always is in a war zone. But it's not entirely clear exactly what that danger was.
He's quoted as saying he looked down the tube of a rocket launcher.
Yeah, that one is just flat out wrong. You know, it's impossible for him to have done that for the following reason. He was in a helicopter that preceded the one that was attacked by a good 30 minutes. And it's unlikely that the people or person who launched that grenade at the first helicopter was going to stick around for 30 minutes so that Brian Williams could fly over and look down the tube of that rocket launcher. So that one just seems completely far-fetched.
And that's Paul Farhi, media reporter for The Washington Post. Also with us is Andrew Tindall. He runs the Tindall Report, and we are talking about the fact that NBC has suspended news anchor Brian Williams, suspended for 6 months without pay after it was revealed he exaggerated his reporting from Iraq in 2003. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. I do want to play the most recent report from Brian Williams. This is on the NBC Nightly News from January 27th, so just a few weeks ago, in which he recounted his visit to a New York Rangers game with former Command Sergeant Major Tim Turpak, whom he claimed kept Rogers safe when an RPG hit their helicopter back in 2003. Let's listen.
We want to share with you a great moment that took place here in New York last night. The story actually started with a terrible moment a dozen years back during the invasion of Iraq, when the helicopter we were traveling in was forced down after being hit by an RPG. Our traveling NBC News team was rescued, surrounded, and kept alive by an armored mechanized platoon from the U.S. Army 3rd Infantry. Command Sergeant Major Tim Turpak was put in charge of our safety. We quickly realized we were from neighboring towns in New Jersey. He went on to fight the war and invade Baghdad and serve several more tours, earning 3 Bronze Stars. We got to return to our homes and families thanks to him and his men. Command Sergeant Major Tim Turpak and I stayed in touch all these years. He just retired after 24 years in the Army. So last night I invited him to see the Rangers Canadiens game at Madison Square Garden. It was merely a chance to be reunited, but the Rangers had other plans, as Tim realized when we looked up and saw our picture on the big screen.
Ladies and gentlemen, during the Iraq invasion, U.S. Army Command Sergeant Major Tim Turpak was responsible for the safety of Brian Williams and his NBC News team after their Chinook helicopter was hit and crippled by enemy fire. Command Sergeant Major Turpak was awarded 3 Bronze Stars for combat valor in Iraq and recently retired after 23 years in the U.S. Army. Both men, both Rangers fans, have been reunited for the first time in 12 years for tonight's game. Please welcome Command Sergeant Major Tim Turpak and Brian Williams.
How about that? Standing ovation from the crowd of 18,000 people as players on both teams slapped their sticks on the ice as a show of respect. And for blocks around in Midtown Manhattan last night, hockey fans rushed up to him to shake his hand and thank him for his service, just as we thank Tim and all those who have served.
Andrew Tindall, it seems to be that it was that story where Brian Williams is exaggerating on his own show that was the reason for his suspension.
That was the Paul has mentioned already, that was the reason for the current furor. I'm not sure if that's the reason for his suspension or whether. He admitted he was wrong about this particular story and apologized for it and took himself off the air. And it could be that if this was all what it is that is wrong, that apology and that self-suspension would be sufficient. The fact that the executives at NBC News have gone so far beyond that, taking him off without pay for 6 months, and also not only criticizing his words, but criticizing his actions. The executive from Comcast said that his actions had been at fault, not just his words. So I don't think that it's because of this that he's been taken off the air.
Do you think so, Paul?
Well, in listening to that again, and I've probably heard it a half dozen times now, I realize how unbelievably smarmy the whole thing is. It's not only factually wrong, the helicopter was not forced down and it was not hit by an RPG, but the New York Rangers, you know, when he says, had other plans for Tim Turpak, well, that's not really the case. NBC and the New York Rangers cooked that whole episode up. In other words, it took some coordination between the network, Brian Williams, Tim Turpak, and the New York Rangers to get that whole thing on the Jumbotron and everything else. So there's something very, you know, off about the entire presentation of that. Now, I understand it's a feel-good story and everything like that, but it's part and parcel of what has been wrong with Brian Williams. The way in which he's presented these things has not been terribly truthful, and that just ain't right for an anchorman to be consistently not truthful.
Yeah, very quickly, Andrew, because I do want to get it. We got a bunch of people that want to join us. Go ahead.
Do you want me to go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead, Andrew.
Just quickly, I think that Paul's right, but it's not just his truthfulness. I think when he said smarmy, I think he's actually coming closer to my position, where I think it's actually his persona that became uncomfortable. It wasn't the words coming out of his mouth or his truthfulness, but he was just not acting like one of us.
Let me get Harold from Drexel Hill to join us on Radio Times. Hi, Harold. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks,
hi there.
Marty.
Sure.
Nice show.
Thanks.
I just have a couple of quick comments.
You know what, Harold? If you don't mind, just make it one.
Okay. I think your guests are being overly solicitous to Brian Williams and saying it's not clear what happened. I think had he told the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, this whole issue wouldn't be going on. So I think some of his interviews and answers were intentionally vague.
You think they were intentionally vague? Paul, we're sort of at the speculative point in this whole saga, but do you think Harold is onto something?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, if Brian Williams had made simple mistakes, we would say, well, you know what, that's what journalists do. But it's a series of exaggerations that do not stack up well and do not comport with the record. And that's the issue here. Can you, as a journalist, consistently exaggerate or even, if you want to interpret this way, lie and still be a journalist? I would say the answer is probably no.
Well, Paul, and this probably doesn't surprise you, I'm looking at all the comments, social media comments we have here, also people waiting in line to talk to us. It just feeds the kind of cynicism that people have about the press, the media, anyway, yes?
As if we need more of that, right?
Well, exactly.
I find that people, you know, have a very low opinion of reporters and journalists, too. And by the way, I think there is a certain kind of pile-on factor here, because this is not just any journalist, but the 10 million or multimillionaire hotshot, big-shot journalist. So there's a great deal of schadenfreude going on.
Let me see what John from Fairmount has to say. John, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi, Marty.
Hi there.
Hi. I'm a former staff photographer at the Philadelphia Inquirer.
Oh.
I am absolutely furious, and I absolutely, totally resent what Brian Williams has done. He's not only irreparably damaged the brand of NBC, but he's tarnished all journalists who are viewed with the stance by the public generally. He's damaged my reputation. And
Don't leave us quite yet, John. When you say your reputation, you mean just because you are a staff photojournalist at the Philadelphia Inquirer? You're hurt by this as well?
I'm a former staff photographer. Just to give you a context, we were called on the carpet if we spelled someone's name wrong. And here he is fabricating stories. It's just totally not journalism.
Well, John, let me toss your comments to Andrew Tindall. Andrew Tindall, anchors seem to hold a sort of lofty position in many people's estimation. And does that give them the kind of freedom to, I'm not saying lie, but to display their narcissism or their ego or to be able to exaggerate things?
Okay, so let's put that the other way around. If we actually think about the content of the misrepresentation that he engaged in, the actual thing that he said that misled us, it is a thoroughly trivial misrepresentation in terms of actually us understanding the circumstances of the Iraq war. Like, we don't get anything right. This is not like lying about, Young President Bush being in the Texas National Guard or not. It's not one of those type lies, or the circumstances of the firebombing of the consulate in Benghazi. That's actually misinforming the public, telling them things so they misunderstand the underlying situation. Here, Williams' problem isn't the journalism that he performed, that he did bad journalism, even though he did do bad journalism. Mm-hmm. That mistake is trivial. This is a mistake of his character. Because all of the things that he's fudged or said wrong or been ambiguous about or told half-truths about have all been in order to burnish his own image. They've all been self-serving. And that's the problem. The problem is in his persona and his character, not in his journalism.
I want to make a segue, only because I'm looking at the clock here. And the other, I guess, big news from yesterday is that Jon Stewart has said that he is not going to be hosting The Daily Show, didn't give a date of when he's going to end his hosting responsibilities. But, Paul, I think looking at my social media here, a lot of people are a lot more upset about that than Brian Williams' suspension from NBC.
Well, I think that's because Jon Stewart, you know, was the meta anchor
exactly.
In this case. In that sense, he was the critic of the anchors that we're talking about, and he called out the things that journalists and news organizations do very badly all of the time. And that sort of made him a respected figure, flying 30,000 feet, above the rest of us. He's not a journalist, but he plays one on TV.
Yeah, what became a very, I would say, influential journalist on TV as well, Paul.
And I think people do trust him in the ways that they do or do not trust real anchors. They expect him to bring some perspective on the news and some actual truth about the news and the way the news is covered. I think he has been one of America's best media critics for all the years he's been on that show.
Let me get Chris from Ambler to join our conversation. Chris, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, Jon Stewart was right. Brian Williams is a symptom of the sickness of the news business, not a cause. More than 20 years ago, with Congress's permission, the major networks eliminated the wall between the cost centers of news and the other cost center of entertainment / advertising. Once you did that, the business of news was to make profits. The way to make profits in news is to be entertaining. It is to, including sending anchors into combat areas to evoke the aura of danger so the viewers tune in and tune back in. They were telling Brian Williams in their own way, look and be dangerous, tell good stories so we get more viewers. And the same thing with other anchors who've gone into danger's way.
Well, Chris, I appreciate the call. Let me, it's an important point. I want to give Andrew Tindall a chance to respond to that. What do you think?
Yes, I think that's right. There is a business model here which says there's a certain amount of revenue that the news division needs and therefore we need to have celebrities at the head of the news divisions, and therefore they need to be paid celebrity salaries. And it's entirely possible that the positive upshot out of all of this will be the anchor will no longer be required to be a celebrity, will therefore not be paid like a celebrity, but will be paid like a journalist, and therefore the profit and loss position of the actual news division will be lowered. They won't have to make so much money. And the
I don't have a real problem with journalists getting paid around. A lot of money, I have to tell you.
You don't have a problem? Mm-hmm. Even $10 million?
No, I would like to be a well-paid journalist myself someday.
But, Andrew, I mean, you actually think that would happen?
Well, you
which
know,
is that, that
CBS made the experiment betting on celebrity journalism was going to save their newscast. They threw an awful lot of money at Katie Couric, and that was a 5-year failed experiment. And then they cut back instead, and they went with someone who was much less of a celebrity and went much more to a meat and potatoes newscast. And in my opinion, it's the best of the three nightly newscasts that are on air at the moment.
I'm going back to John Stewart, Paul Farhi, and I have to say Brian Williams was a pretty regular guest on The Daily Show.
Yes.
But yesterday he called the scandal a case of infotainment confusion syndrome, and I think that's one of the reasons that we all have loved The Daily Show in their use of language and their ability to sort of get right at the nub of the matter.
Yes, I thought that was a very well-chosen phrase. This gets into a more controversial area, but the larger point that John Stewart made was finally someone is paying the price for exaggerating
right.
the facts about the Iraq war. And, unfortunately, it's Brian Williams. John Stewart said, surely it should have been some of the people in the government, but that's another issue.
Well, indeed, but I think an important one. And Andrew, do you think, and I'm looking at another comment, maybe NBC News has come to an agreement with John Stewart on Meet the Press. Otherwise, I'd like to see it mimic Fox even more. The question is whether John Stewart could get a hosting job on one of the networks. Do you think he could?
No, I don't think he... Well, I think he probably could. I don't think that's what he wants to do. I mean, he's an entertainer, and he knows it. He's a comedian, and he knows it. As serious as he is and as smart as he is, I think that's his that's his direction.
And to you, Andrew, what do you think, or do you think that Brian Williams can rehabilitate himself?
I'm entirely skeptical of this. I really don't expect him to be back working as an anchorman again.
You don't?
No, I don't. And frankly, I think Lester Holt will suffer less of an erosion of audiences in that time slot than people expect, and therefore will show that the entire enterprise of turning their anchor into a celebrity turned out to be not as important in terms of generating audiences as conventional wisdom says it is.
And Paul, we're almost out of time, but do you think Brian Williams can do something to rehabilitate himself?
I don't really know. I don't see how, but, people have short memories and people tend to forget, and who knows what kind of public relations magic can be applied here. I just don't know.
Well, on that note, my thanks to all, thanks to the two of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Paul Farhi, thanks so much.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Media reporter for The Washington Post, Andrew Tindall, thank you very much as well.
Fun,
a lot of fun for us as well. Runs the Tindall Report, monitoring the nightly newscasts of the three American broadcast television networks. And we began our conversation with Michael Lev. He's a member of the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune and actually covered the war in Afghanistan and Pakistan back in the early aughts. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times and you can carry on the conversation we have been having in this hour of Radio Times. Go to our Facebook page, send us an email. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thanks for joining us in this first hour of the show, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.